tackling tough topics to help you think reasonably about life's most important issues. This is Thinker Sensitive. Welcome to Thinker Sensitive. My name is Ryan Ragazine, and I am your host. This is the 7th episode of our season entitled The Simple-Minded Society. Today, we're going to be talking about a particular kind of censorship, online censorship. In 2018, Sam Harris, a popular philosopher, neuroscientist, and podcaster, left Patreon over the censorship and banishment of conservative accounts said to be associated with hate groups. Harris, who is probably more liberal than conservative, believed this to be the result of blatant political bias, and so he deleted his account and bailed. The notorious Joe Rogan, a person who is beloved in some circles and hated in others, but currently hosts the most successful podcast in the world, has been a consummate voice against online censorship. These two figures are a part of what some call the intellectual dark web, made up of figures like Rogan, Harris, Ben Shapiro, and Jordan Peterson. It encompasses a group of varied and diverse influencers who hold certain key values in common. There's a great article from the New York Times called Meet the Renegades of the Intellectual Dark Web, if you're interested. Like them or not, love them or hate them, those associated with this movement share some common principles. Anti-censorship, anti-political correctness, free thinking, free speech, and truth-based rather than feelings-based or desire-based knowledge. Let me be clear. This doesn't mean that they're always consistent with their values or that they actually live up to their ideals in practice. That, of course, is contestable and up for debate. Thinker Sensitive represents a Christian appropriation of some of these aforementioned values, combining notions of freedom with Christian love, speaking freely in love. So let's discuss the issue of online censorship, the web police, the big brothers of the internet. Social media companies and big tech corporations have set a historical precedent for banning, blocking, demonetizing, and blacklisting various videos, podcasts, blogs, and social media accounts. They basically censor whatever they subjectively deem as inappropriate. These decisions are often based on the subjective, relative, ambiguous, and too often misapplied standard of hate speech. Now, private censorship from private companies is legal, but is it unethical? And should it be legal or unregulated when it is executed by corporations that function as monopolies on modern communication and information? University of Detroit Mercy Law professor Kyle Langvart sums up the main concern. He says this: "What concerns me is that we entrust a few unaccountable and self-interested tech companies to govern online discourse. It seems obvious to me that this is an unacceptable way for a liberal society to do business. These companies are influenced, at least in some way, by the powers of various foreign governments, who have been reported to pay a lot of money to social media platforms for ads, with the purpose of influencing political opinion and action. A 2019 article from VOA called "Foreign Money Flows into U.S. Politics" goes into this extensively. Some of these powers don't hold to the democratic ideals of the United States. China is a great example of online censorship on a mass scale, as they filter what their citizens can access online. I believe Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube are all blocked in China today. So a question looms. Are social media companies more interested in money and profit, or in civil liberty and constitutional goals? Now, this is a tough question, because I believe that the purpose of a business is to make a profit. But at what cost? I also don't know how I feel about social media platforms policing certain ads from certain sources. But I also don't like the idea of foreign influences impacting the kind of news that we see and don't see on these platforms. There's also the issue of ideological bias on media platforms, and in particular from those who moderate and run social media platforms. Both sides of the political spectrum have been targeted and have voiced opposition. However, it's definitely fair to say that there is a natural liberal and agnostic or non-theistic bias in big tech companies, which are dominated by West Coast, Silicon Valley millennials and young professionals. By and large, these companies are run by those with strong liberal and non-theistic biases. I'd encourage you to read the 2018 article from Vox by Caroline McCarthy with the subtitle, "Silicon Valley is a Young Atheist World, and That's Becoming a Problem." For those wondering, Vox is known as more of a liberal-leaning media or news outlet, so the fact that this article came from Vox is rather telling. I want to take some time at this point to evaluate the criteria that big tech companies use and social media platforms use to make judgments on what type of content should be censored and what type of content should not be censored. I'm going to use Facebook as an example. Hate speech is the main criterion for censorship on Facebook. Facebook defines hate speech, quote, as a direct attack against people rather than concepts or institutions on the basis of what we call protected characteristics: race, ethnicity, national origin, disability, religious affiliation, caste, sexual orientation, sex, gender identity, and serious disease. They later go on to say, quote, "We define attacks as violent or dehumanizing speech, harmful stereotypes, statements of inferiority, expressions of contempt, disgust or dismissal, cursing, and calls for exclusion or segregation." Misinformation has also become a standard. In recent years, Facebook has started to remove accounts that they believe can contribute to imminent physical harm. They've started to flag certain posts that they believe to be inaccurate, making them less visible and placing warning labels on them. And they also remove certain accounts from recommendations. Let me give my personal opinion on these things. As far as misinformation goes, I gave my opinion on the last episode. I'm a bit leery of this kind of thing. I'm not sure that I trust Facebook moderators with this job, and I'm concerned about a possible slippery slope. Where do you draw the line? Who is making these decisions? Are the people in charge of making these decisions qualified to make these decisions? This is a tech company, not an ethics committee. I know Facebook recently put together an oversight board, but it only reviews the most difficult and challenging cases, and it's also been criticized as being too left-leaning, though I'm not sure how true that is. I think private citizens and individual users carry a responsibility to fact-check the information that they encounter on their own. I do understand the impetus to correct misinformation, but doesn't the ultimate responsibility here rest on the shoulder of the consumer and the individual? Is there something to be said here about the loss of notions like responsible citizenship and personal responsibility and accountability? As far as hate speech goes, I'm fine with the definition and standard created by Facebook. In fact, their definition of hate speech is very similar to my own. The problem is not the criterion as stated, nor the application of the criterion as stated. The problem is, first, on a general societal level, hate speech, or the label of hate speech, is too broad, too vague, and used too loosely. Second, people are often unable to distinguish between attacking an argument and attacking a person, or between disliking an idea or action and disliking the person who has the idea and does the action. Third, in an age of hypersensitivity, social justice warriors, and simple-mindedness, many people are alarmists who are prone to look for hate speech in places that it doesn't actually exist. Much of this is driven by ideological bias and the suppressing of divergent ideas in the public sphere. We are much more likely to mischaracterize an idea that we don't like as hate speech than to mischaracterize or misconstrue an idea that we do like as hate speech. In the case of Facebook, moderators and the general public alike, who are given the ability to flag content, all fall into these common trappings. This is not just a Facebook problem. The other big tech companies have the same issues. Moderation in these contexts seems to be a more natural job for lawyers, philosophers, and ethicists than members of the tech community, though I don't know what kinds of backgrounds these moderators have. Let's take a quick look at some examples of censorship from Google. It's been found that certain words and phrases have been excluded from the autocomplete feature of the Google search bar. Some of this has been dictated by political bias. Look up the quote, "crooked Hillary," end quote, issue during the Hillary Clinton email scandal, for example. Search engine results can also vary based on personalization and location. Does this mean that if I live in a super conservative area, that I will mostly see conservative content? If so, this could lead to echo chambers and the suppression of divergent or alternative perspectives. Censorship also takes place on YouTube. According to an article from The Verge by Julia Alexander in September 2019, YouTube's teams had removed more than 100,000 videos and 17,000 channels since the company implemented changes to its hateful content policies in June of that same summer. But it doesn't just stop there. Google News has been known to ban news sources from its news feed for ideological differences. According to a CNN article in 2005, Google, quote, "blacklisted all CNET reporters for a year after the popular technology news website published personal information about one of Google's founders, Eric Schmidt, in a story about growing privacy concerns. Google Ads also has a history of censorship that we could talk about. Of course, as most of you know, this is not just a Google problem. Twitter and other social media companies do many of the same things and fall into many of the same trappings. But what can be done about this? I think the reality is that there are no easy answers or solutions. One possibility is greater clarity and transparency. Susan Nossel, the CEO of PEN America, said this on the matter, quote, "But we are concerned about the discretion that exists at the hands of these platforms, and we advocate for greater transparency for the public to understand how Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, etc. make decisions that affect their individual online expression." Another possibility would be regulation and greater accountability. Kyle Langvart from the University of Detroit Mercy says, quote, "The queasy answer is that the very largest platforms should be subject to some kind of ongoing administrative oversight of their censorship practices. It's an ugly solution, but I think our society will eventually wind up there if we continue to care about free speech." I know Facebook has an oversight committee now, but does their oversight committee need an oversight committee? I think that's a valid question. But then would an external third-party oversight committee be policing Facebook and impeding the freedom of a private company? I think this is why Kyle calls this possibility an ugly solution. Responsible citizens do need to work to raise awareness and to raise concern. It's possible that change could occur through public pressure. If the situation gets really bad, boycotting or protesting are possibilities. If you protest, though, just please remember to keep it peaceful. The last possibility I have listed would be the creation of alternative platforms. But so many of these alternatives so far seem like just the other side of the coin in so many ways. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next time. This episode, and all episodes of Thinkersensitive, are available at thinkersensitive.com, iTunes, Spotify, and more. If you enjoy our content and wish to donate to help us grow our online community of thinkers, please visit thinkersensitive.com.